welcome to another episode of the GT Radio. Tino Magnetta here. And I have a good friend here tonight, and also the first guest we had on our show when we first launched it, Conrad Granito. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, doing well. That's going to be my only claim to fame, you know. Your first guest on the show.
On the GT Radio, yeah. And that was very kind of you to do that, because back then nobody knew what it was all about. So you were like, yeah, no problem, I'll do it. So I always loved that about you.
Busy days, busy days.
Yeah, so you guys got a lot going on there. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing, and let's parlay that in what's going on in with all the expansions going on in Indian country.
Sure. Well, Muckleshoot's been around now for 24 years. We just celebrated our 24th anniversary in April. And, you know, through the years, I've had about 14 different renovations and add-ons, and as many properties have. But we had made the decision, and council had made the decision, to go into a full renovation of the property and add certain amenities. So we're over 100,000 square feet of gaming now between basically two casinos. But we're adding a 20,000 square foot event center, 6,000 square feet of pre-function, adding 10,000 of gaming, which will add about 350 positions, three station food court, and then a new center bar that would join the area during that time. Over that, that'll be all completed by April of next year, and we'll also be renovating all the restrooms and the casino floor alongside all of this and a number of our food venues. We'll all get a refresh. And then the other big news is that we will hopefully break ground here in August, September, for a 400-room hotel that will also add 22,000 square feet of gaming, another 15,000 of meeting space, two restaurants on the first floor, lobby bar, and then a pool on the second floor with a spa and salon and fitness center, plus Kids Quest. About 16 stories total tall, with a fine dining on the top, with patio space and private dining up there. The cool part is that we'll take advantages of, we're located up on a mesa, and 60% of the rooms will actually have a direct view of Mount Rainier, and the other 40% will actually have a direct view of the Olympic mountain range, you know, weather permitting, on either side of the hotel. And that looks to be completed probably, let's say, second or third quarter of 2021.
Wow, that's a lot. That's amazing. So,
yep.
What spurred this decision to make such big moves and big growth? Because everybody's hedging that way. In your circumstance, what is it? Is it?
Well, I think you have a couple things. The property has traditionally been and is a locals casino. 70% of my business comes from 17 miles from where I'm sitting. We get some interesting bumps when you get past about 50 miles, but we've taken that and really, you know, identified who our customer base is, and through promotions and everything else, have grown the bottom line considerably over the last five years. And because of that performance, it really, you know, speaks to the issue of, okay, how do you maintain it? How do you take it to the next level? And again, then you're now looking at, you know, the amenities and meeting space and hotels and everything else. And again, it all has to be managed and yield correctly, but that's it. But I think you're getting into, you know, the next evolutionary path that is tribal gaming. And like you said, many properties, you know, here in Southern California have all done the same thing, and across the country are either updating properties, renovating properties, adding amenities, adding hotel rooms, to continue to be competitive, within their markets.
And do you think that all this expansion will be supported, or do you think it's too much?
Well, you know, it's a hard, you have to look at individual markets, and I mean, we've, of course, done our feasibility studies and research and, you know, see where there's, you know, definite opportunities for what we're going to provide. But every market is going to be unique. And I think, you know, you think you have capacity or whatever. I mean, there's, you know, very strong competition, you know, Southern California, Oklahoma, Arizona. I think, you know, you have to look at those areas to say, you know, can you support this and is it going to make sense? Or are you creating new markets or you're just stealing market share away? You know, tribal gaming in the Seattle area has been around over 20 years, and you would think it'd be a very mature market. We're finding, as our competitors, you know, new markets to tap into and, you know, new people willing to experience, you know, this form of entertainment.
Now, you had spoken about the hotel and how that will increase your reach. And that comes at a good time because Seattle is exploding, right? I mean, the population.
Oh.
You guys are...
Well, what's interesting, yeah, Seattle's growing leaps and bounds, you know, even with the weather and the – which is – it's and I'm just telling everybody, it rains every single day here. It never is nice, and which is a total lie, but it just – when it is nice up here, it's gorgeous. But we still have more cranes, I think, than anywhere in the U.S. or in downtown Seattle, which, of course, there's huge growth. But even in the surrounding areas, because of real estate prices, where we're located is South King County, part of North Pierce. There's still all types of growth going on and people moving into the area because in comparison to, say, parts of California or, you know, other parts of the country, you know, it still has an affordability index that's, you know, okay, you know, but of course, you know, living in downtown Seattle is going to be a little bit different than, say, living in Auburn or Federal Way.
Right, right. It's going to be different pricing on that. So the idea with the expansion is to increase the reach, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely increased reach, increased, you know, as you look at hotels, as, you know, any casino, you know, operator, hotel operator, you know, adding the availability is, can I increase stay? Can I increase time, you know, here at the property? You know, even that's unique. I mean, we're somewhat of a suburban casino right now, but we have literally, you know, a gateway to Mount Rainier. And so part of this, we're looking to extend the stay of our current guests, offer something to people who are past that 50-mile mark, which I mentioned we have an interesting uptick of play and also spend, but then also provide, you know, places for small, relatively 200, 300 small groups midweek, you know, to take advantage of this. And, you know, as we look down the road, to be a jumping-off point for everything that Mount Rainier has to offer, you know, during all the seasons.
How does this project compare to some of the other projects that you worked on? Is this fairly massive in terms of what you've experienced?
I mean, we're, you know, the whole 400 hotel rooms plus everything. I mean, I can't give you exact, but, you know, the budget's over $200 million, between $200 and $300, basically, you know, $1 million total in. So it's not, not humongous, but it's also, I think, well, you know, we're designing it and value engineering it to maximize the dollars, you know, that you do have. Our challenge is, you know, in different parts of the country is finding, because there is a lot of construction going on, is making sure you have all the subs and the contractors to make it happen on a timely basis.
Now, you've been in the business a long time, over you know, almost 30 years. Does
almost.
This stuff become that's a long time,
I'm getting
right?
old. It's like, dang.
You and me.
Thanks for reminding me.
You and me both, buddy. Yeah, you and me both. Does this stuff get easier as you get more experienced? Are you feel like it's easier, or do you feel like it's the same thing?
I don't know if it's. Like, I don't. It's not so much. I think it's easier. Every single project, whether it be a, you know, any type of renovation, whatever, has its own challenges. I think the excitement is, you know, looking, planning, working with the architects, working with that, and then seeing it actually come out of the ground and being developed. I think, you know, what comes with age and hopefully is, you know, you're during the whole time asking the right questions. I think at some point you get to know some of the answers, but it still doesn't matter. I mean, there's still things that pop up that, you know, gee, I didn't know that or didn't know this. So it's a journey of exploration, but yeah, you've been to some of them, but, you know, things change, tastes change. I mean, what was important, say, 10 years ago or 15 years ago is not as important as it was before. And, you know, concentrations on certain aspects of a project, you know, change with the guest customer base, but also technology and what people want to be entertained by.
What do you feel are the biggest changes that have happened in the last 10 years that you're approaching with this project? What are some of the things that has evolved in gaming that is very different than some of the projects you worked on 10 or 15 years ago?
You know, I think you look at I think a lot of things have stayed the same. I mean, gaming, it's still, you know, as Mike Metzger was like saying, you know, it's gaming stupid. I mean, you know, it's still the gaming floor, at least for the vast majority of tribal casinos, regional casinos. It's not all the other amenities. You need to have those, but you're still making the vast majority of your revenue on that gaming floor. So I think the accentuation of comfort, whether it be in the chairs and the ergonomics of the machines, and then the games themselves, you know, with all the different lines and bonuses and everything else, you know, brings up a whole discussion of, you know, when people are on a game or in a game and the delineation there. I think the biggest change also when you look at the gaming floor is the use of promotions and, you know, on-game promotions, you know, with the different bonusing suites that the slot manufacturers, slot systems have, which, you know, enable the player, the whole idea is to have that player sitting at the seat longer. I think then you look at, you know, different amenities or different things that people expect within the, you know, the room itself, and, you know, whether it be, you know, a bigger flat screen TV, multiple shower heads, you know, double sinks, you know, the linen count, you know, things of that nature. You know, I think it's different, but it still should be an experience, at least that I say is, you know, somebody comes into the hotel and they're seeing or experience things that they can't get at home for the most part. So, you know, I think more concentration on the experience that someone's going to have at the property than just, you know, providing, you know, a restaurant or games or whatever. And I think if there's been a big change in the 10 years, it would be more what you would call the experiential marketing, or really looking at the guest and what kind of experience are they going to have. And that starts at the, you know, from the time they move up to the valet to the time they go into the bathroom to check into their room. What was that experience like? And I think we're, as operators, more conscious of that.
Right. Instead of it just being a casino, it's the whole package.
Right.
What do you attribute the success of our business and the success of Native Casinos? What do you attribute that to?
I think when you look at casinos in general, I think, you know, they provide a form of entertainment that, you know, people have come to expect. I mean, I remember years ago, if, you know, would date myself, the Harris study would come out every single year, and, you know, they would say, well, you know, 5% of the people have experienced a casino, and then it went to 10, then it went to 15 as riverboats came online and tribal casinos, then more states authorized some type of casino gambling. You know, now it's well over 35% of the U.S. population has at one time experienced a casino environment in the last year, I think, is 35, 38. I mean, it's those type of numbers. And, you know, so I think you have it as a form of entertainment. But with that entertainment, you've seen, with, of course, Vegas being the leader, showing that there's other experiences that people want to have with that gaming, you know, there. And it could be provided on a regional basis. You know, the challenge that you have within Indian country is, you know, I've spoken about this a number of times, is, you know, we're not a conglomeration of you know, entities like a Penn or an Eldorado or an MGM. You know, for the most part, most tribes have maybe one, maybe two casinos. And then, but a lot of times we compete with, you know, public companies that have, you know, larger databases or larger staffs to, whether it be do data analytics or marketing or whatever, so, or purchasing power or things like that. But I think the success is one where people, you know, see that this is a great form of entertainment, and it's still a value proposition. And I think that's the one thing that we can't forget in this business. And, you know, we, you know, I've talked about this, and speed of play on the machines, or, you know, odds on games and everything else, at the end of the day, the player has to feel like they're getting enough bang for their buck to sit there for whether it be 3 to 5 to 6 hours.
Interesting stuff. Now, is the elder generation, is that still the core demographic?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's two things that you need in gaming. You know, there's, I call it my two wallets, time wallet and money wallet. And in a locals casino, a lot of times the time wallet will evaporate before the money wallet. How? It's, you know, person comes in, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're still playing, they still have money in their wallet, in their gaming wallet for the day, but it's 3:30 and I got to go pick up the kids, or I got to go run and do this. You know, it's different when you get to a resort where, you know, or Vegas where I'm there for X amount of time, you know. You know, my flight, I get in on Friday, my flight doesn't leave till Sunday, you know. You know, how do you do that? So I think with that, the 55-plus older demographic is still there, still the core of our business. You know, the funny thing is still in this country, you know, 10,000 people turn 65 every single day for another 8 or 10 years. I mean, that's not going to change. And those people, even with, you know, all the ups and downs of the economy since 2008, still have more disposable income and time than the 20 or 30-somethings. You know, and that's the challenge that we have. Yeah, we want to cater to that, you know, generation that's coming up. But are they ready to truly be a gambler, or are they, you know, interested in a, you know, into the nightlife or this or the pool or whatever, which still has great, you know, again, there's revenue to be made, there's margins there, but it's not the core of the overall business, you know, for this time. And that, I think, to that end, you know, what is that gaming going to look like 10 years from now when they're in their 30s or 40s or whatever? How does that change? And, you know, then we go into a whole 2-hour discussion between mobile gaming and, you know, and e-gaming and a whole bunch of other stuff to say, you know, what's going to make the attractive and interactive and skill games that the person that's been playing Call of Duty or League of Legends or whatever, you know, for the period of the last couple of years, what's going to entice them to sit down at a slot and, you know, have it make money on either per machine or per square foot basis.
You've been very successful and are good at what you do, obviously. What characteristics?
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. What characteristics do you possess?
Well, certainly not, as my wife says, it's not my good looks, that's for sure. Nobody hired me for that. I think it's one. You know, I was having a conversation with my AGM today, Jesse McDaniel, and he's in an interesting position because he's the first Muckleshoot tribal member to reach that level of upper management. And we were talking about that, and he said something, and I said, yeah, I have a passion for this business, and I think I love this business. I, you know, like you said, I've been doing it almost 30 years, and it is, I just love the business, and I love all the intricacies, and God help me, so I love it in Indian country. I mean, it is a rewarding to see, you know, the success, you know, the properties that I've been affiliated with, but the success is seeing the houses built or the elder care or education or infrastructure or, you know, that's the, you know, I think, but having a passion and loving what you do. And I think people that are successful in this business have a certain gene, and to me it's the service gene. You have to really want to serve people, you know, and want to do that on a daily basis. And if not, you're in the wrong business. I mean, just don't be in this business. So, but I think, you know, passion for it and, you know, and liking, I think the other part is, you know, people say, you know, I view myself as the least important person in this property right now, because if, you know, God forbid something happens, I'm heavily insured, my wife's taken care of, but this place ain't going to stop. You know, my job is to,
right,
you know, hopefully lead it, take it to the next level. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not on the floor and, you know, dealing with all the stuff. It's all the team members that my job is to support and make their job easier.
If we look beyond, you know, if we look beyond 2025, where's the next spurt coming from growth?
Whoo-wee. That's an interesting one. I mean, you know, retirements are the idea of retirement has changed. You know, it's you don't retire, you maybe slow down or you do something different. You have the idea of entertainment and what it is changed. I think to answer that question, you got to tell me where some technologies are and what's allowed and, you know, how do we deal with certain things that within gaming, because it's definitely going to change. I mean, you look at, you know, how we entertain ourselves. It's no longer, yeah, we might buy the 75-inch, you know, brand-new LED, but, you know, most of us get our entertainment off of a 5-inch or 6-inch thing that we hold in our hand and interact with the world that way. So, you know, I think that's a tough crystal ball question. I don't know if I can answer that one. Especially 5 and 6 years old.
Yeah, do you think that the rate of growth will continue, or do you think that it will plateau at a certain point? Or?
Well, I think, you know, I think for many, many years, gaming was pursued as, you know, from the investment community to many people, is that recession-proof. And what you had in 2008 was it wasn't recession-proof because now it was not just in 2 or 3 or 4 markets, it was in 30 or 40 markets. And it's subject to, you know, ease of credit and everything else and real estate prices affected gaming. So I think in that regard, you have a situation where I think you'll always, you know, you're going to see some growth, but, you know, tell me when the next economic downturn that's going to have impact to people's wallets and, you know, do people feel comfortable, you know, to basically go spend money and, you know, go out to eat or go gamble or be entertained or whatever. I think you're going to continue to see growth. Some regionality downturns will happen. But, you know, that's a hard one to look at.
You think that there are any negatives that may pop up in the future?
Oh, now you're trying to have me think of a black swan. You know, possibly. I mean, if you had some type of, you know, economic or energy or something that affects people's day-to-day lives, yeah, that's gonna do it. Or some type of, whether it be a natural disaster or, you know, international or national disaster affects people's lives and affects that. I mean, you know, I've been in this business long enough to, you know, be impacted by hurricanes and financial downturns and everything else. And, you know, it's I think the key point is that you run your business, you know, with the eye that, you know, if things go south or things change, you better be running lean and mean all the time, not just in the, you know, when times are bad. And I think that's, you know, if you look back to 2008, I think there was a lot of people who thought, you know, it's never going to end, never going to end. And you had a lot of projects, not just in, you know, in gaming, but even around the country, tribal, non-tribal, that didn't make sense even when it was good and made total no sense, you know, when things went south.
What do you think there the Greeks had a saying that your character is your destiny?
Mm-hmm.
That's true in the casino business even more than any other business, right? Because you're dealing with entertainment.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that. When I got in this business, you know, almost 30 years ago, I, you know, knew very little about it, and I, you know, mm-hmm. found someone where his family had owned a small casino in Vegas, and the thing he left with me, you know, was all you have in this business is your, you know, your reputation and your character. And I think, you know, that's what, you know, this is a business of trust. You know, you think about it, you know, we're basically telling people, come here, we're going to gamble, we're going to give you a fair game, but everybody who walks through that door needs to feel like they have an equal and even chance than anybody else. When that goes away, you're dead. I mean, it just, now nobody wants to come there. And I think the character that we have as leaders has to carry through organizations and be, you know, follow through all the way through. So, yeah, I think, you know, your character and what you present, what you do, you know, dictates and hopefully, you know, is one of positive and supports and makes a difference. You know, I look at the end of, you know, every work day or whatever, and I ask myself one question. Did I have a positive impact on the business today? You know, if I can answer yes, then, you know, I've done my job for that day.
Now, with expansions also comes different revenue amounts. So the amount of revenue that we make from gaming is one thing, but then the amount of revenue that we make on all the retail is another.
Mm-hmm.
Is that dip in revenue affecting anything at the casino? When you look at other amenities?
No, I mean, not for us. We're looking to add on to the experience. Again, a lot of it will be, you know, how do people pay for it? Is with, you know, incentive points or something like that. I think the other issue that you have is as you're adding certain amenities, case in point here, we had in the state of Washington, downloadable credits only showed up at 2015, where other parts of the industry, they'd been there for 10, 15 years. If you had a cashback incentive program here, you actually gave them cash. You know, the problem, of course, is you gave them cash and, you know, three things can happen. They could put the $60 in the machine or put $20 and walk with 40 or walk with the whole 60, you know, and no way to track it. What we found is by changing up our program and giving greater value, the points where we had just billions and billions of, you know, unused player points because we didn't have a lot of ways for people to utilize them, we gave them a way to use it. Now, so it went into gaming instead of food and beverage or retail, which saw a dip, say, for the first 18 or 24 months. But by concentrating on the product and consistency of service and a whole bunch of stuff, we now, the cash sales for retail and food have far surpassed what it was before.
Got it. So the because the margins are not larger, it's not going to affect the overall revenue,
well,
right?
Yeah, I think you look at, I mean, for us, gaming is always still, I don't foresee where any other amenity, you know, is going to take over gaming as, you know, the actual thing that, you know, works its way to the bottom line because of margins and things like that, you know, and overhead there. I mean, you look at, you know, whether running a restaurant, you know, in a casino or off the casino, you know, your margins are never great. And in a casino, 9 times out of 10, we're taking it as a loss, you know. So, you know, as an amenity to, you know, to the players so they don't have to leave and go to dinner and come back. They can have dinner here and still stay at the casino.
Right, so you're saying that those amenities will actually increase the gaming revenue, even though the margins are going to be lower.
Sure, that's the intent. I mean, the intent is to, you know, keep somebody here and, you know, a little bit longer or an extra day or, you know, extend their stay or give them a reason to come with an amenity. And then, or does it expand your market by having an amenity that normally I wouldn't go to a casino, but they now have the best Asian restaurant in the area, you know, so I have to go there. They have the best steak, or they have a show that, gee, I really wanted to see, but it hasn't come here in a while, but now it's going to be at the casino. So all of those play in. The key in operating is to look at those and, you know, as best you can, measure that impact and have enough of to say, did it move the needle, or am I trying just to maintain the needle? And in some markets, that's what you have to do because of competition. You know, I bring in a show, I don't make any money, but I got to have that show and that artist, even though production and everything else is extraordinary, you know, I'm actually going to lose money on it. But because that's what the gamblers want in my core business, you know, it gives me an incremental visit for them to be here. And therefore, you know, I'm making it up on the gaming floor.
You've worked in a lot of different states. What is unique about Washington than other states that you've worked at?
Washington is great. I think you have a huge diversity of cultures here that I think a lot of people don't realize. Being a seaport and being there, you have, you know, of course, Native Americans, but you have, you know, different Asian cultures. You have Eastern European cultures, which I had no idea. You have African cultures of Somali. It really is a huge melting pot. You'll be around the city and all of a sudden it's almost like you're at the UN. You'll hear, go to the mall and you'll hear, you know, 15, 16 different languages being spoken. The other uniqueness of Seattle is the impact that traffic has 7 days a week. This is, you know, you talk of LA, you talk New York, you talk certain, you know, Houston, Dallas, whatever. There are certain times a day and people literally, within a 20-30 mile radius of their homes, they don't venture too far. So it's really an interesting situation. Our direct competition, of course, is, you know, Snow up the road or Emerald Queen down the other road. But, you know, anything, you know, that's on the other side of Seattle or south of Olympia, whatever, it's they're not our competition because it's just too far to travel, you know, to do what it is. So
you think that the area that you're in can sustain the growth in the gaming that's happening right now? In your
all indicators footprint? Are showing that, you know, that you know, I mean there's things that drive the Washington economy, as every regional economy has. Here, of course, it's Boeing, you know, that, and then the high tech, and, you know, whether it be Microsoft or Amazon, or and then the health industry. I mean, those are the huge drivers for their, you know, for this market. And as long as those are doing what they need to do, no different than, you know, Houston market is driven by oil and what that does, but it's also a shipping port. And, you know, but all indicators here is that, you know, there's still continued strength within the marketplace, and it's going to continue for the foreseeable future.
What is it that a customer, when they're deciding on what casino to go to, what is it you think that makes them go to one casino over another? What are the factors you think that comes into play?
Well, I think it's a number of things. I think what I tell, so marketing's job is what I call top of mind. So marketing's job is to create the brand, help create the marketing messages, the promotions, that basically, hopefully, when somebody says, gee, I want to have some fun, or I want to go eat, or I want to be entertained, you know, Muckleshoot becomes, you know, top three or five. You know, they do that, then, you know, they have, then hopefully it gets them here. Then our job within operations then is to actually fulfill that promise. And if we fulfill that promise and give the guest service and everything else, you know, that's the key, you know, to do that. But, you know, to answer your question, you know, I talk to guests as often as I can, but, you know, I talk to guests that have been coming for over 20 years, and I ask them, I said, why do you come to Muckleshoot? You know, and just flat out. And this is an answer I'll get, so they'll say, you know, I've been coming here for 20 years, and I remember when you were in the tent, and, you know, my husband was here, and he won a car, and, you know, I won a jackpot, and I know you're expanding, so you've tightened up the machines, but we still like to come, and, you know, you changed the cheese on the grilled cheese sandwich, you know, in the deli. We really like that. But, you know, when I come to Muckleshoot, I just feel better. And when I hear that, you've now taken a rational thought process and now made it an emotional tie. And I think the properties that can make an emotional link with their guest that basically says that they feel better. But that's the same when you ask people, gee, why do you go to that grocery store? You pass four grocery stores on the way to that one. Or why do you use that dry cleaner? And when it gets down to it, it's somewhat familiarity, but they just feel that this is that they either know them, respect them, know, you know, the whole know your name, but you need to get to that point. And I think we all have the same machines, we have similar payouts, we have similar things like that. You know, players, you know, will, especially in this market, will bounce from, I don't get every, you know, very rarely do I get everybody's, you know, wallet. I get portions of it, maybe more or less, but, you know, the other properties are close enough that, gee, I don't feel lucky, so I'm running down to this property, or I'm going to run up to that property. That happens. But I think the properties that do well and create the loyalty is that emotional tie-in.
But our proposition to the customer is very different than, let's say, their experience at Starbucks or at a restaurant. Our proposition is come to our casino, lose your money, and then we'll decide when we're going to give it back to you, right?
Well, you know, this is the thing I
So how do you make them feel good about that, right?
Well, that's the challenge. I mean, you know, whether you talk at what's the latest thing for what's it called? It's basically the loyalty question. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, if you had to risk your reputation, you know, would you be an ad? The advocacy score, public companies call it something else. It was in the journal. I can't forget what they call it, but it's basically a score of saying, you know, are you an advocate or not? And what's interesting is with gaming, we basically tell people, I mean, this is our business. We ask people to get in their car, burn their gas, drive, you fight the traffic, come here and do what? Lose their money. But we want them to have such a great time losing their money, we want them to come back with their friends and relatives and do it time and time again. You know, 90% plus of people who walk into a casino are not going home with less money in their pocket, and they have to feel good about that. Yes, they might get something at the gift shop. They might get, you know, have a full stomach from a meal, be entertained for, you know, a couple hours in a show. But bottom line, you know, people are coming here and lose their money. Now, the difference between us and, say, going to the movies or going to an NFL football game where you're going to spend $80 to $100, you're going to come here and $80 to $100, but at the football game or the restaurant or the movie theater, you don't have a chance to win $10,000, $100,000, or $1 million. That's
right.
You know, that's the difference in our business, and that's why when you talk to most, you know, serious gamblers, it's not the winning, it's the anticipation of winning. That's what we're selling.
Right, right. The anticipation of winning.
Yes,
that's what a real gambler wants.
They want that anticipation.
Right, the fact that they could win.
Yep.
And they don't know when
so
it's going to be a surprise for them, right?
Well, sure. But that I have won and it can happen again. Or, I mean, you listen to players and you know they'll say, "Do you know how much I have invested in this machine?" I mean, just the words they use, you know.
Yeah. I know you've been in the business a long time, and
you know, you're making me feel real old here, you know, just FYI. Just,
yeah,
you know,
we both are. I think I'm older than you. Actually, I turned 60 in September, so
I turned 61 May 4th, so.
Oh, you did? Oh, happy birthday.
I
didn't even know that. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Well, we'll have to, you're 1958, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So you're 1 year older than me. I didn't know that. what you strike me as the kind of guy that is not going to retire. Am I right about that?
My wife asked me, "When do you want to retire?" And I said, "Well, quit buying horses and we'll talk about when I retire." But
right.
You know, I love what I do, and I don't know. You know, retirement, like what I mentioned before, retirement's going to mean different things to different people. And, I mean, yeah, I'm 61, but I still, you know, thank God I have my health and my mental faculties, at least for the most part. But, you know, this is still a fun business, and I'm still making positive impact. I mean, could I see myself doing this for another 10 years? Yeah. At the pace I'm at? Maybe not. I don't know. But it's fun. You know, so it's like, why not do what you love to do? You know, I mean, do I have other hobbies? Yeah, I have a few and, you know, do things like that. Could I see myself not doing this business? Yeah, probably. You know, but I'd still fill my day with a whole bunch of other stuff that I'd want to be doing.
Now, I know a lot of our listeners probably don't know this, but you have like, what, 6 horses?
Nine. We have 9 horses. We have 8 horses and a mini mule, so...
And you really love to ride. I know that.
Well,
I would love to ride. Describe that to us a little bit.
Well, I haven't had the opportunity to do as much riding or any actually since we've been up here. So we're planning that this summer to really get back on the horses and everything else. So we're still in the mode of getting the house and getting the property set and a whole bunch of other stuff. But where we live now, their access to riding trails is literally almost out our front door, but definitely down the road a couple miles. So we're looking to do that this coming this summer.
And that is definitely one of your passions, correct?
Yes. No, yeah, definitely. You know, with with being the horses, my wife, yeah, I've always had horses in my life at different times. Maybe not directly, but indirectly. But meeting my wife, and we've been married. We'll be married 10 years this year. She had horses, and you know, she moved with me to Louisiana, and we brought the 3 she had, and then from there we've added and deleted, as people who have horses have a tendency to do. So
it's great. You got to come out and visit sometime. Should we take some calls?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Can you hear me? Are you on mute?
Hello.
This is Thomas.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Conrad?
Yes. Hello, Tino. This is Thomas. Hi, Conrad. How are you?
Hey, Thomas.
This is
good.
Thomas from Verona. Hey, I want to get the record straight, okay? Because not that I'm counting, but Tino brought up the fact that you have a lot of experience 8 times, and he never even mentioned that most of it was done in overtime. So, you know, in your heart, you're still in your mid-30s. So there.
Thank you, Thomas.
You're welcome, Conrad. You got it.
Thanks, Thomas.
But speaking of experience, and I don't know how many listeners know that you've consulted close to 60 companies, 60 different casinos, and
yes,
most
I
of
have.
Them survived. That was really the amazing part. How
yeah.
do you guard against using your experience because it was great and it worked and still keep a fresh perspective? Because obviously you came from, you know, through marketing and the gaming. How do you gauge your experience and grateful for it, but try not to fall back into and do the same thing all over again?
I think I take something that I got from my father, was that the whole object of learning is to understand that how much you don't know. And every single day I realize what I don't know about this business, and what I don't know about, you know, many, many other things. So I, you know, you might call me an expert, or maybe I, you know certain things, but I don't have every single answer. It's a very straightforward business. And I think, you know, the consulting and things that I've done is hopefully, you know, set things up, or, you know, paint a direction, or have direction of things. But in that regard, I realize every single day that I don't know everything, and that I have much to learn. And that's a thing I try to do every single day, is learn something new, whether it be about myself or whether it be about this business, because it is, you know, it's a constant learning curve.
That's cool. Thank you. I, you know, that's what I admire about your leadership, is, you know, you try each day to basically justify that you have the position, rather than just saying, oh, look at me, I've accomplished it. Do you have time for another question?
Absolutely.
How do you caution tribes not to get carried away with resorts? And I'm referring back to your quote, the scam, gaming spirit. And there is a tendency, and Vegas kind of lit the movement, that now that we have casinos and we have resorts, that we promote resorts, and we kind of forget what really drives our economic engine.
Well, I think, you know, I think it's not only tribes. I think the challenge, 2008 was a wake-up call for this industry, because if you recall, there were a number of projects being built in Vegas and in Indian country that never made any sense, and the financing has gone sideways and upside down, and, you know, a lot of different ways. Case in point, I got to Kashada right before 2008 happened. The plan was to spend $250 million on a full-blown resort, and when I got there, we were at 50% drawings. And then 2008 happened, and then the first tranche of money was going to be only 7% when we started, but it was 12 or 14%, and I had to go back to council and said, you can't do this, given this, you know, the debt load or whatever. It doesn't make any sense. Now, we still needed rooms, but the other aspect of a full, you know, renovation is there. We just found a better way to do the rooms at a much more cost effective, and we were one of the first Dreamcatcher hotels, which I know some of you are aware of, but you know, out there. But I think I think you have within Indian country now, I think, you know, you've hopefully, you know, as we age or whatever, and now Indian gaming is well over 30 years old, is that there have been mistakes made, and hopefully the wisdom is not learning by your own mistakes, it's learning from other people's mistakes or other businesses or other entities. And I think what you have now in this, the current generation of tribal leaders who are literally, you know, the reason the success story of Indian gaming is now the tribal leaders in their 30s and 40s who have benefited from 30 years ago and been able to go to school and be educated and move on into roles of leadership, you know, is what this is all about.
Yep. Very good. Thank you. One last question, if I may. Do we have enough time, Dino?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. The other thing you mentioned was experience is key. A lot of casinos separate their marketing efforts from their guest service efforts and don't really understand that marketing and branding needs the support of guest service. Can you give us any advice of how to structure guest service, how to plan guest service so it becomes also a marketing tool? Because like you said, people come to your place for a specific experience, and you know the guest service or player service plays an integral part of it. Any suggestion that you can have, or is there any observation that you made over the years?
Well, I would say this. I would say when you're looking, guest service is not a program. It is not a 3-day seminar. It's not a rah-rah. It has to be part of the culture. With along that, it needs to be identified, have measuring points, and nurtured and followed, and not just part of your marketing, but part of everything that you do. So I think to your point, yeah, it can't be separate to itself. It has to be tied into not just your marketing, but how I run the restaurant or how I check in a guest or, you know, what are the things that need to be said or how are we going to say it, and have those standards and make sure you're measuring those standards, because there are standards of guest service that every property should have and that you're measuring to.
Great. Thank you, Conrad. As always, wonderful to talk to an industry leader. Thank you, Tino.
Thank you, Thomas.
Okay, thank you. And always like to listen to the great show here. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Okay.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Conrad?
I certainly do. This is Heidi Antezana. How are you, gentlemen, this evening?
Good, Heidi.
Very good.
So I have 3 pages of notes. All right, Conrad. you should be writing a book. You have such wonderful sayings. I really, really love what all your insights. And Thomas is one of my biggest mentors in this industry, and he just about took every single question. So thank you, Thomas. So very quickly, Conrad, I wanted to ask you is I remember your byline being, your tagline being at Muckleshoot, something like the biggest and the best. Is that changing with your new expansion, or what are you doing in terms of your branding campaign per se?
Well, our branding right now is the biggest and best in the Northwest, Muckleshoot.
Mm-hmm.
What we're tagging on now is now we're getting bigger and even better, because we are enlarging the entire property and adding, you know, amenities and everything else to it. So we're actually starting the branding exercise, and because this brand has evolved over the years and will now take its next step as we evolve into more of a resort experience.
Got you. What do you do in terms of empowering your employees to reinvent their own brand? Because that's the kind of thing that you constantly keep doing in terms of just the learning and everything that you do on a daily basis. But I often see when I go to expansion properties, like you'd be maybe spending $300 million behind an expansion, but the employees are still stuck in the same way of doing things, same thing, way of branding themselves going forward. So do you look at empowering them in any way in terms of them reinventing their own brands?
You know, we're actually in the process of doing some of that now, where as we are looking at different venues and we are, working with even the architects at this point, that operational departments are getting involved at this point of design, how it's going to look, color palettes, things of that nature, so that we're getting their input at this point as they are now pretty literally on the ground level for them to then start saying, okay, we need to, you know, do things this way, or we're going to have this level of service, or we're going to have, to look at this way or say this or maximize mm-hmm. this, you know, there. So that's what we're doing right now, is trying to get them literally on the ground floor as we're making all these renovations. And as then we get into the branding aspect, you know, we'll be pulling in, to me, more importantly, frontline staff. You know, the staff that's there talking with the guests, talking with the dealers, the housekeepers, things like that, and say, okay, here was the brand. Now, what does Muckleshoot mean to you? What is this? How is that brand going to do? that in itself is you know, one step in, you know, empowering them. But it's also, you know, as we get into, you know, developing our brand, but also working on the guest service aspects and the metrics, you know, giving them the ability to make a decision or make a call, even at a frontline level. You know, I don't have to go to a supervisor. I can make a call or whatever. Those, and it could be very simple things, you know, from, gee, can I have another piece of whatever in the restaurant, or, you know, can I, you know, extend my stay 2 hours and I don't have to go whatever, you know, giving that ability for someone to, you know, make a decision, but at a frontline level is, you know, very empowering for a lot of people because they're not given that ability.
Absolutely. What about change? How do you deal? This is the last question, Tina. What is I've dealt with some Southern California properties that are expanding, and I would walk through the floor after expansion and ask some of the maybe cocktail servers, how are you finding your new place, etc. And they say, oh, we still loved the old place. How do you deal with the how would you deal with the whole change? Because human beings, you know, tend to be very non-flexible when it comes to change.
To me, it's never an easy task, and because you're exactly right. Human beings have we want things to be better, but we don't want them to change to be better. So it's a difficult. So case in point, today we just reopened, or we're going to reopen we have pizza here, and we've done a revamp. We have a new pizza. So we basically have told all of our team members, go buy pizza, go get a free slice of pizza or two or three. Tell us what you think. But so I was down there, and we have new restrooms all of our restrooms are being renovated. So they're kind of screened off. So I opened it up, and I took a whole bunch of our team members through the new – now, they're not finished yet, but you have levels of finish. You see the new sinks, the new faucets, and they get a real sense of, oh, my gosh, this is really nice, you know. And they get a sense of what this is. And I said, this is the bathroom, guys. I mean, if the bathroom is this nice – what do you think the rest of the property is going to look like? And now the eyes get wide. There's a sense of excitement. So the point that you make with change is there has to be a sense of excitement. It's what we do in our business anyway, is to create a sense of excitement and a sense of fulfillment. Do that with your staff. Let them see what's going on, you know, as through the processes, and then they get excited, and then they are the advocates for change.
I love that, because it's a voyage you're taking them through. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Conrad. You're always fantastic. And Tina, thank you
as
well.
Thank you, Heidi.
No problem.
Have a good
night.
Take care.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Conrad?
Can you hear me now?
Okay, I guess they're...
I hear somebody.
Now? Aloha, how's it going? Mike Hanoi, how you guys doing?
Good,
Special
Mike, how
K,
you doing?
How the heck are you?
I'm doing great, sir. You know, I listen to the show, always a good show, obviously. I got one thing that stuck out when you were talking about, you know, 30 years, you know, mistakes have been made. And not saying that you've made any, but are there things like career... Are there things career-wise where, you know, you've learned from, we'll call it an area of opportunity, you know, throughout your career where you're like, you know what, I'm going to carry this forward and definitely learn from it. You know, we all have those moments, but is there anything that sticks out in your mind through your journey where you said, you know, wow, that was a tremendous learning lesson for me, and I've been able to kind of move forward with it?
Well, yeah, I mean, trust me, I made mistakes, Michael, and you can call my wife and she'll tell you. But I think, you know, I think one of the things is when you're dealing, it's one of, I think, the communication and making sure that those communication lines are always open. And sometimes, whether that be with counsel, whether that be with staff or whatever, and yeah, there was definitely, you know, before I got here, there was an incident where, you know, the chairman and I didn't see eye to eye, and you know, I look back on it and think, you know, gosh, if I would have did this or did that or brought him in or tried to, you know, and it just didn't happen, and it gets frustrating. So it's, I think you always want to keep those things open and not be afraid. Because what I've told councils or boards that are tribal boards that I've worked with, because all my history has been in tribal gaming, is my job is to tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly. My job is not to sugarcoat things. And sometimes it's the message is tough, but it's how you deliver that message.
Well, that's a good point. I think you know, a lot of us, you know, I kind of have heard some of the Conrad stories over the years. But you know, if I were to kind of dive down a little bit more and kind of give you the opportunity to kind of talk a little bit about the expansion. And I mean, in terms of, you know, you have a local property and here you're going to be adding the resort element and really expanding the features the property offers, which, you know, community-wise, you know, we've all heard the requests, you know, we need to get a hotel, we can get a hotel, we can get a hotel. But
right.
Now that you're full board into the expansion, how do you kind of, you know, tell the story of how that really is a revenue-generating opportunity, you know, not just to compete with the competition, but to grow the business for Muckleshoot?
Well, I think it's that's where you get into the finance and you get into the accounting side and, you know, show the history. And I think, you know, which you have awareness for here, you know, the performance of the property from where it was 5 years ago to where it is now. You know, and Tino talked about sustainability. If we keep doing what we're doing, it's not sustainable. So to make it sustainable, we have to broaden what we do and broaden the experiences that we have. And at that point, you're putting numbers to, you know, your best wild-ass guess to we should be at this or whatever, being, of course, conservative. And that's whether you're selling it to a board or a council or selling it to a set of bankers, you know, to finance it. And then, you know, looking at the track history if you have, you know, for it. But that, I think, is the biggest challenge to, you know, because you're exactly right. I mean, every property almost said, yeah, we need a hotel. And a lot of times, you know, it doesn't make sense. You know, like Thomas says, you know, oh, we need a resort. No, you really don't, you know. I mean, case in point, I know what we made here at Muckleshoot, and I can tell you it was more than what a number of tribal properties with, you know, 900 or 800 or 600 hotel rooms were making net. You know, it just, you know, I think that's the challenge is, you know, making sure that what you're presenting and can you actually deliver on those promises.
No, it's a good point. And it's an exciting time to kind of move forward and see how that, you know, with knowledge and with the data, you know, you can kind of change your perspective and take advantage, like you said, the financing opportunities and some other things to really make that business deal happen.
Right.
What's something you just wish you had in Washington?
Oh, what I, by way, is that open-ended or just what a stick at the game?
You pick, you know, but I would assume for gaming, but what would you pick?
Well, you know, I think what's interesting is we do not have regular slot machines. We have, without going into the long dissertation of the tribal lottery system, it's not a random number generator. So it limits the scope and scale of a number of the games we have and bonusing and progressive jackpots and things like that. Now, you know, just like in Oklahoma, you know, that had the Class 2 machines and whatever, they did extremely well, and we have. So I think something like that, you know, people talk about sports betting, but as we all know, it's a nice amenity, it's a nice experience, but it doesn't bring a lot of things to the bottom line. So, you know, I think if I had to pick one thing, probably that, because we have all the other forms of gaming are pretty well available to us. I think the one thing I would love to have in all of our, and I think it's coming because of FinCEN and the Know Your Guest requirement, is
right.
That there will be a day, I think in the next couple of years, that a jurisdiction will allow a debit card or a credit card to go directly into a slot machine. Because the requirements of Know Your Guest, and if you're in operations, you know what I'm talking about, and what the FinCEN and what the U.S., you know, what they're asking you to do is basically when Michael comes in and he, you know, bets $10,000, I'm supposed to know where he got that money. I mean, it is that crazy. And literally, there will be a jurisdiction, I don't know which one, but somebody's going to allow and say, because the technology's there, we could do it today. But we are now one of the last bastions of cash business in this country, you know. The others that are heavily intensive in cash are not legal.
Right.
But we are one of the last bastions of legal money, cash handling.
Cash business. Yeah.
That's right.
Great, Mike. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you, sir, and you guys have a great show. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye. This is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Conrad?
Hello, am I on?
Hello. Yes, you are. You're live.
I am live. All right. Yeah, this is Doug from Cord Media, and I've been listening. It's been really interesting. Earlier on, you're talking about sort of the data and the insights and information you have on your customers, as well as a lot of the anecdotal data and information you get from talking to people on the casino floor. Is there anything in the upcoming expansion of the property that you can like give some insights or some details on, if you can reveal them, in terms of how you use this information to determine some of the amenities or features of what you guys are doing with the upcoming expansion?
Well, I mean, before we, you know, did the expansion, we talked to, you know, different levels of guests by way of their, you know, theoretical and, you know, value by way of a gaming guest. And we asked them what they wanted to see in restaurants and different aspects and, you know, rooms and things like that. So we're incorporating, you know, what they're looking for. You know, that, you know, whether it be in some of the restaurants and some of the menu items, also, you know, even the rooms and how they want to be set up and things of that nature. Case in point, you know, one thing we heard time and time again, two sinks, have two sinks in the bathroom. Okay, guess what? Every single room is going to have two sinks, even though it's a single king, it's going to have two sinks in it. And it doesn't sound like much, but it never fails that a single king has two people in it and they have to share one sink. So, you know, it's things like that don't sound like much, but, you know, it's a simple thing to add. It's not simple, but, I mean, it's a simple thing if there's a cost to it, but it's what the guest is wanting to have. And like I said, they want certain experiences that they wouldn't get at home, which is kind of interesting. So, you know, a lot of homes now have a rain shower. That was the big thing a number of years ago. Now it's body shower, you know, type of things within that. You know, size of the TV, types of comforters, things of that nature. So, you know, we, through our surveys and different things, you know, we're going to be enlarging our non-smoking. Right now we're about 60% smoking, and we have the largest non-smoking area in the state and probably, you know, maybe in the West Coast. When this expansion and renovation is done, we'll actually be 60% non-smoking and 40% smoking.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. Great stuff.
So then, then I guess since you're expanding the property, how do you figure out, how do you go about, you know, expanding the club or layering something as large as a new hotel into your existing club and figuring out who gets what and how that all works?
Well, that's, you know, that's the always challenge, because you only have so much inventory, and, you know, how do you then yield? And, you know, we sit down and have those meetings of how you're going to yield rooms and a time of day, time of year, guest level, different functions that are going on. That all goes into the mix. Currently, our player clubs is not a tiered program. We are looking to, you know, possibly implement it, even though we do have a VIP you know, kind of a tiered program, but it's more of a different set of benefits, but they're identified as VIPs. So, yeah, we're going through that process right now, and really just, you know, you go through the process and start weighing it out and what that room is going to have value, or what, like anything, whether it be a reinvestment or a gift of the week or whatever, what's the value and how are you going to put that value in and as a redemption or something.
Cool. And then you just mentioned using credit cards inside the machines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm even younger than that. What? How far away, or do you think it's an option, a situation where, you know, the club card, the payment, everything is just done by my, you know, by my cell phone or device?
You know, that I think you look at our industry, and what's interesting from the analytics that we use to the other industries, whether it be retail or whatever, you know, it's interesting how far behind, even though how much data we collect. But I think it's you know, people have talked about, you know, interactive or skill-based gaming for the longest time. We still don't have it. I think we will have some different type of payment system, whether it be a scan of your phone or whatever, because at that time, when that happens, all of these requirements of suspicious transaction or whatever go away, because all that information is now at your bank. Right now, we have to go through all of the machinations of FinCEN of suspicious transaction and Title 31 and everything else, because they are cash transactions. So but it'll have to take a regulatory body to basically say, yeah, we're going to allow this. But when they do, I think it will be, I think jurisdictions will accept that faster than you see them accepting sports betting.
Wow.
Great stuff. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate the answers. Keep up
the
good work.
Got it. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks. One more here. Time for one more.
All right.
Tino Magnetta, do you have a question for Conrad?
Is this my turn now?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello. Yes,
hello?
You're on the air, live. On the air, live. Hi.
All right. Good evening. Hope everyone's doing well. I was going to call you Mr., but I don't want to make you feel any older, so I'll just go with Conrad.
That's fine.
I just want to say thank you first and foremost for you know, spending some time with us and sharing your knowledge and your vision and whatnot. I often look forward to opportunities like this, because it's kind of like being in a college course and being able to learn from someone who's far more intelligent than myself. So I just want to thank you very much for being here with us.
Well, thank you for the nice compliment.
Well, absolutely. I would try to. I have a bunch of stuff, but I know we were running short on time, so I'll try to get through it as fast as possible. I was curious, and you know, one of the things that you had mentioned was about the transition of generations that are coming in. So you now have people, their gaming experience is more on the side of actual, you know, video games. You mentioned Call of Duty and all these kind of things.
Sure.
It prompted me to wonder, how do you think, as a different generation is going to start to be your target guest and customer, will the gaming industry itself change in regards to what's being offered for the experience on the gaming floor?
Well, I think that's been the challenge that's been asked for over 10 years, of whether it's an interactive experience, whether it's a skill game experience. How do we fit the model of what this industry knows, which is basically a random number type of situation? I've had numerous discussions with video game programmers and also slot side to basically see if we can marry the two, because a slot machine, for its basic thing, is a random pararandom number generator. That's a whole show by itself. But basically, that, you know, you don't know when it's going to hit. Where, you know, Call of Duty or whatever, the business model there, it's a linear type of thing, in that as soon as I know certain levels, I go to this level, I can, you know, within 2 weeks, the game comes out, it's $130. Within 3 weeks, the cheat codes are on the internet, the game book comes out 6 months later or 3 months later. Once I go through all the levels, that game is done. So how do I take that game and maybe at certain levels put in a random number generator that changes the outcome on a random basis to go from level to level, or certain aspects of the game that you're going through, and make it, because the time on device doesn't equate anymore. Because, you know, if you play any form of video game, you could sit at that game for 10 hours. And, you know, depending on how many cases of Red Bull you have. You know, we still have that on, you know, on a regular slot machine. But, you know, I'm making a whole lot more money for that 10 hours than I am with somebody on the other. So that's going to be, I think, a real challenge. And that's why you see the, you know, millennials, whatever, gravitate to games that they can be more actively involved, whether it be blackjack, poker, you know, things that they have an active thing. That, you know, today's slot machine sitting there pressing a button for 4 hours just ain't going to do it. But that, I don't have that answer, and I think it's something that, you know, the game developers, you know, we're going to have to get some hybrid to marry the two, and what is that experience like?
Right. Do you think that this creates some kind of interesting paradox where, again, as you mentioned, you can have somebody who will engage with a specific game experience, you know, at their home or a place where those type of games take place for 10 hours, but at the same time, they are, you know, part of the ADD generation where, you know, it's kind of like, hey, look, you know, if it's longer than a minute video on Instagram, I can't watch that. If it's more than, well, now 200 plus characters on Twitter, I don't want to read it. So it's almost kind of like you have the same person that can be on the exact opposite ends of the spectrum. Is that a, does that add a whole different level of challenges, do you believe?
Oh, I think, yeah, it does. I mean, that's going to be the challenge. I mean, here's the other thing is, you know, when I was 25 or 35, whatever, did I think it sitting at a slot machine was exciting? No. Do I still think it's exciting? Nah, it's okay, but I'd rather play cards or whatever. But you raise up a really good question because you have now a whole generation that forget about 1 minute video. If it's longer than 30 seconds and hasn't caught my attention, I'm clicking to something else, you know, and that's the real challenge. I think as we move forward, what are those gaming experiences like? And you have to look, you know, to the point of the different apps, the different things, you know, that dial into it, you know, then you get into, do you overlay an augmented reality, a virtual reality, you know, into a gaming experience that could, you know, take the ADD, you know, generation, and I know that's a broad term, but, you know, interest them long enough that it makes economic sense. Or do you change the entire gaming model that you prepay for your experience? Okay.
Right.
You know, and maybe you win, maybe you lose, but you're prepaying, you know, so go back almost, because that's what bingo is. I mean, understand bingo is a form of gaming. It's multi-billions of dollars. It doesn't make as many casino, but it's a prepaid gaming experience. You prepay for X amount of hours of entertainment. You have some opportunity of in-game purchases, okay, you know, to buy specials, buy this or whatever, but it's a pre-game, you know, it's a different business model. That I don't have. That I don't have. You know, again, that's part of the learning of something new every single day.
So we'll have to bring this up again
so
in the future, and I'm guessing you have an answer.
Yeah, it was some. I don't got one today, and I. But it, you know, but I think it's something the industry is going to have to figure out in the next 5 to 10 years better than we are today.
Well, thank you again for all your time and your insight.
No, thank
Thanks.
You.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Well, Conrad, another great show. I can't believe we've actually gone 15 minutes over. So we still have other callers that want to. Yeah, we went over a little bit. But thank you so much for being on the show. You're a good friend.
Thank you.
Continued success and enjoy your evening and happy riding with the horses. I hope you get more opportunity to ride them.
That's the plan. Thank you, Tino. Thank you all.
Thanks, Conrad. I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was fantastic. Great guy. Lots of great knowledge, and he's doing some great things for Indian Country. And we're gonna have him back on the show. He was on a couple of times, so we'll have him back. On Wednesday, I have Sheila Morago. She is the president and the director of OIGA, the Oklahoma Indian Gaming Association. She's got a big show coming up, and I'm looking forward to talking to her. She's fun. She spent an early part of her career in L.A., in Malibu, and she's got some great stories. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good night, and we'll see you on Wednesday.